Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hey, everyone. It's Asten Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your mustache of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Picture perfect, you don't need no filter. Gorgeous, make them drop dead, you a killer. Shower you with all my attention. Yeah, these are my only intentions. Stay in the kitchen cooking up, cut your own bread. Heart full of equity, you're an asset. Make sure that you don't need no mentions. Yeah, these are my only intentions. Shout out to your mom and dad for making you. Staying in a vision, they did a great job raising you. When I create, you're my muse. The kind of smile that makes the news.
If we're talking about mustaches, you know we're talking about Justin Bieber. big holiday podcast episode today, talking about changes, talking about Justin Bieber's preferred fashion silhouette. We're talking about his YouTube confessionals. We're going to talk maybe a little bit of Harry Styles, a little bit of Selena Gomez, and we're going to talk about it all with Lindsay Zoledz. Lindsay, you came through in the well-loved old JB merch. Talk to me about what you're wearing today.
I am wearing the Purpose Tour tee with Justin's face on it. And then, thank you.
That's what I'm saying. For future podcast guests, just know this is going to be a fit check. I know.
Yeah,
you're going to have to account for what you wear to podcasts.
It's my president.
That's true.
And it's a great shirt because on the back it just says sorry. So if you're
on brand.
Yeah. If you're offended as I walk away, I'm sorry.
But also, on top of that, he is sorry. This is an early look in his eyes.
I wore this shirt a couple years ago getting lunch with a friend. And you can see, like, it is larger. Justin's face is larger than, like, a human's face on the shirt.
That's
and
accurate.
Halfway through, my friend Drew was like, can you put on a jacket? He's like, I can't have a conversation with you.
It's a little, like, Abaddon style, the photo.
Mm.
But I don't know if the proportions are weird, but his eyes seem bigger than they normally are, maybe. It's like slightly Funhouse Mirror.
It's the sadness and the atonement.
He is sorry. Again, is very on brand for Justin Bieber in the year of our Lord 2020.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into changes. One quasi-programming note. I do want to say at the beginning of the first mailbag episode, we put out a request if anybody wanted to start a Facebook fan group, which I know, you know, maybe seemed a little bit of like a Hail Mary, a little bit of a random request. And you know what? Someone did it. So shouts to Sam. Sam, who put together the Facebook group. About 350 people have already joined.
Wow.
And we haven't even said anything on Popcast yet. This is the first time we're mentioning it on Popcast.
Yeah.
It's all just off the strength. Off a tweet. That's right. You know, I got like rich off a mixtape. So this is the album version of the information, which is to say that there is a Popcast fan Facebook group. Get involved. I'm in there talking to people, getting dragged, answering questions. It's a lot of fun. Get involved. Certainly, there already is some talk about Bieber on there. So hopefully we can fuel that a little bit with this week. I want to say Karen is not in the office today. It's a holiday, technically. Karen's not in the office. So I feel totally safe to say this. I very much like the Justin Bieber record. And the more I listen to it, the more it makes sense as kind of like a holistic whole to me. And I find myself soothed by it. I kind of believe in the intellectual and aesthetic project.
You believe?
I do. I've been believing.
Yeah.
TBH. What's your energy on this record?
I like it.
Yeah.
I agree with a lot of what you said in your review. It feels more cohesive than Purpose, but it also doesn't feel like he's having to play by like the big pop album rules, which is going to be to the detriment of some of this. Like, I don't think any of these songs are going to be radio hits.
Super smashes. No.
Yeah. That you kind of, I was listening to Purpose again today, and it's that back to back to back of
Where Are You Now? And What Do You Mean?
Sorry.
Yeah.
And then Love Yourself, which is
great.
But just like that, there's no stretch on this album where you're just like, I'm going to hear all of these songs on the radio or any one of, like, it's more, it's just a vibe.
And if I'm remembering the rollout of Purpose correctly, the sort of like EDM-ish singles predated them, and at least predated the album, I should say. And if I'm not wrong, like at least one of them was technically like a Jack U song. Like it wasn't a Justin Bieber song and kind of got repurposed as a Justin Bieber song.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
It was the Jack U record, which was Skrillex and Diplo.
Yes.
Where Are You Now? That was it. There are so many question songs. It was What Do You Mean and Where Are You Now?
Yes, a lot of extraneous songs.
He had a lot of questions in 2015.
Right. And so that ends up looking on the Purpose Deluxe, that it ends up as track 11 on Purpose. But I remember thinking that Bieber was in this kind of liminal state before. Actually, let's listen to Where Are You Now. Let's beat these kids over the head with
Please.
This. So you know what pop music sounded like in 2014.
When nobody else was paying, I gave you the shirt off my back. What you're saying to keep you warm? I showed you the game everybody else was playing. That's for sure.
That's for sure.
And I was on my knees when nobody else was praying. Oh Lord. You know the nature. Where are you now that I need you?
So I remember thinking at the time that Bieber was like in a bit of a liminal state because he was clearly not going to be allowed to do the R&B that was in his heart and which at least one critic famously tweeted about and wanted to support from a distance. So he wasn't going to be allowed to do that. The musical aesthetic, the sort of overall sound of his earliest records, I wouldn't say was particularly fixed. He wasn't like a teen pop star. Like he wasn't, I don't want to say he didn't have a genre, but he didn't function in the same way that an early Backstreet Boys record or an early Britney record even had like very tight relationships to kind of like amped up pop. Bieber always felt like a little more slippery. And so I think going into the Purpose era, he didn't have anywhere to land. And I think low key, Diplo and Skrillex kind of threw him a lifeline and gave him an idea. And then he was able to ride that idea kind of through the Purpose era, Love Yourself being the big hit that's kind of the exception to that. But he was able to ride that, but it was never really to me. I was never like, this is what Justin Bieber is happiest doing, is best at doing, and will continue to do, to say nothing of the fact that it's a sound with an inherent expiration date because it's so pegged to the EDM rise of the early 2010s.
And I think the difference, too, of like when you listen to those songs now, he sounds really sad on them. They're really melancholic vocals. And
Big
I think that's
facts.
Kind of part of the appeal. Like, it's just these, I think, the tension between the really bright, splashy EDM beats, and then this guy just sounding miserable and full of remorse and questions, and just this voice that we kind of know just feeling like in this low moment. I think that was something about what made those songs work in a way, but there was a darkness to them too. Absolutely. That was kind of unsettling. And I think with Changes, he sounds happy and the beats sound happy too. Like there's a buoyancy to the whole record.
Beats.
Yes.
The bubble beats are major.
Yeah. And it suits him well, I think. All of the energy is like aligned in the same direction, whereas there was that tension on the Purpose hits.
I also think Justin's not a singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. Not really. I'm not going to say he's never been writing words in the studio, but like as you see in some of the YouTube stuff, you know, Pooh Bear lays down a demo, Justin comes in and re-sings the demo with a little bit of twist on it. I don't get the sense that Bieber's doing a lot of like word-for-word songwriting. He might be doing conceptual, like, I want this to be about my what? You know, like he mm-hmm. might be doing that, but I don't think he's doing word-for-word songwriting. And I, many years ago, did a piece where I followed his vocal producer, who was a guy named Kook Harrell. So this is like 2011 or 2012. And I was in the studio for a night with Bieber and Kook Harrell. And you really, now obviously Justin was a kid then, but you obviously see he's coloring within the lines. Someone crafts a melody that goes with the beat.
Yeah.
Someone or that person or another person puts the words that fit in that melody. And then Justin puts the voice to the words that fit in the melody. I don't want to say there's no humanity that can be achieved in that arrangement, but you can feel for someone who I think natural instinct is to riff and whose natural instinct is to kind of like be a little soft at the edges with the voice. That's not a great setup. And I think those EDM records in particular were tough because those beats were so, they're so square. They're so hard and you can't do a lot. I mean, especially if you're not the one who's writing or inventing, you kind of can't do a lot around them.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason that the style of music on this record was chosen is it does allow him, even if he is still singing essentially Pooh Bear demos, like it does allow him some flexibility in terms of the delivery.
He's always had an issue with some clunky lyrics that there are a few lyrics on this album that I'm like, he had to have written that. Like,
oh, come on.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Which one?
My favorite lyric on this album is, let's get it in expeditiously.
I don't think he wrote that. You think he
wrote
that?
Yeah, I don't think he knows what the word expeditiously
means. No, I don't think so either.
And to be fair, do any of us?
No, but to be honest, I think that's like a Tank lyric. You know what I mean? Like, that's like a Tank lyric. Like,
I thought it was my favorite.
That's like a sexy R&B lyric. Yeah, like, I would love to hear Tank.
There
Tank.
You go.
Can I just keep coming back to Tank?
Just put it out in the universe.
Tank, can we play 20 seconds of Maybe I Deserve by Tank? Woo! So I want you to hear the word expeditiously.
Mm.
Tank voice. Singing expeditiously.
He could. For sure.
Needing you to come to me.
There you go. Baby, it's cool. I deserve for you. That's like aspirational for what he's going for.
Yes,
I think he's not quite there yet.
No. But I can
he'll
hear
grow into
that
it.
Song, especially. I felt mm-hmm. had like serious Tank vibes. Again, I don't want we, you know, this is podcast. We're open to all forms of creation of pop music. We don't knock people for singing demos sung by other singers. Otherwise, I'd never talk about country music or most pop music. But something that I said kind of like halfway in the piece, but I did not totally drive home for some reason is, so I think Justin like low-key likes adult contemporary R&B, and by adult contemporary R&B I mean Tank, I mean Eric Benet, I mean K-John, Kem, like all this stuff that's like not, it's like WBLS, it's not Hot 97, it's WBLS. And Pooh Bear, who writes most of his music, is like a middle-aged Black R&B singer. I mean,
yeah.
There's no,
yeah,
just not to put too fine a point on it. And so I'm not surprised, like when you see them in the docuseries being like, Justin being like, you know, Pooh Bear's my guy. He sees my vision. He understands it. And Pooh Bear's like, Justin really understands my thing. Like,
yeah.
I just think that's Justin being like, I get my R&B. Like, I literally, that's like my friend is like this cool R&B singer. I want Justin to sing R&B for a couple of reasons. One, I've never seen a less convincing pop star who's this famous. Like, there's no one more famous than Justin Bieber. And I've never seen like a more reluctant pop performer. So I reread everything that I'd written about Justin Bieber, and Justin Bieber was coming to his own as I was at the New York, just at the New York Times. So I used to cover a lot of live shows. So
your journeys were just parallel.
They really were. And I saw his garden show. He played like a jingle ball. Like I wrote a lot about Justin Bieber, like probably 10 pieces about Justin Bieber over the decade. And a lot of them remark upon his discomfort, his seeming being ill at ease with being famous or being on stage. And certainly the tour that you are wearing.
Yeah.
I mean, literally dangling from a box hanging over an audience, like a Lucite box, sitting on the floor of it, moping and like scrawling on the inside of the box. I can't even remember what, like prisoner or something, like basically free me.
It was dark.
Call the police, like anything.
Yes.
And so Justin Bieber has always been kind of a reluctant pop star.
It was a July show at the Garden that I think was like 4 months into that tour. Mm-hmm. And somehow that tour continued to go on for like another year. Yeah, and he already seemed so checked out. And
I remember texting Karen during it and being like, can I write this review? Can I write this review in the structure of a police report reporting a kidnapping?
How did that go?
I tried it when I got home. She was like, I think she said okay. I think it didn't come together that way. I mean, I alluded to it in the piece, but I remember at the time being like, this is so crazy.
Yeah.
This is so bonkers.
I wrote a still unpublished piece called 13 Ways of Looking at Justin Bieber's Purpose Tour that survives and will someday.
Well, it survives, and now it survives in my email.
There you go.
Do you want to read one select sentence from this piece?
What I do remember... Well, there's how can I choose of the 13?
Do you want me to choose?
I can set the scene that was most memorable of the banter from that show, which was that, I'm curious if he did this at the date that you saw too, but he was like, started being like, who here is 11 years old? Make some noise. Yeah. And like people made some noise. And then he was like, who here is 12 years old? And he called out,
run for your lives.
Every age up to 30. And just like think of how long that took in real, like it got to the point of this is still happening. This is crazy. And then the friend that I brought with me was like 34 at the time. And I was like, get ready. And then he got to 30 and he just stopped. And then I think he was like, who here has children? And so like that's so anyway.
Who here is mindful of cold death? Immediately around the corner. Right outside the door.
It just was one of the weirdest. Like that exercise took like 5 to 7 minutes and just, I don't even know. So that was like his level.
Am I quoted in this? Whether a sign of boredom or resentment or both, Mr. Bieber's 100-mile stare was the steadiest feature of his performance.
That's you.
Did I say that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Shouts to me.
Yeah,
that's okay. That's good. This piece is actually low-key. This is a good piece. I do want to say it's a good piece. I was like really, I very rarely at that stage, was this 2016?
Summer 2016.
I very rarely at that phase, because I'd been at the paper like, it's probably 7 or 8 years at that point. I'd seen a lot of shows. It's very hard to like emotionally jolt me at a concert. And I was just like, I felt like all my nerve endings were alive at this show. And feeling pity and empathy and anxiety and stress about Justin Bieber's well-being.
I think that had to be your takeaway, unless you were in the 11 or 12 age bracket, maybe, or just like hyped to see him. But I think I wrote later on in that piece too that it like made me have this whole existential question, such as what do you mean? Of like, why do we even need all the pop stars to tour? Some of them are not suited to that. He does not seem happy in this role. Why is he spending most of his life on the road in this joyless way? Like, this can't end well. I do remember, too, like, I had never seen a big pop show where he wasn't even pretending to lip sync. Like, probably, like, 50% of the time, just the mic that he was holding was just, like, down at his waist and... Like, not even playing with the charade, which I kind of respected. I was
So, like, two potential analogs to this. Mm-hmm. One, I reviewed a Bollywood tour very early in my time at the paper. And I didn't immediately understand that a lot of what was happening was lip synced. And it was very expert level. Like, they were great. It was not like Bieber struggling. But I remember thinking, like, it doesn't matter that it's lip synced because the presentation, like, the thing is the presentation.
Totally.
And, like, even if no one was lip syncing, but the music was coming in exactly as is, this would be a completely enjoyable, outlandish, great performance. That's one thing. The other thing is Rihanna, who also, certainly in the middle period of her career, when she was like just getting to arenas and whatnot, did not have a strong relationship to live singing and kind of like would dip in and out of it and also dip in and out of whether she cared to lip sync. But I remember at the time being like, wow, Rihanna's so, she's so bad, like good bad, not bad bad. That I was like, she don't even care.
Yeah.
It's like, we're here at Madison Square Garden, Barclays Center, Giant Stadium, wherever. And she's like, whatevs. Justin Bieber can't pull that off.
No.
So those because, are two like, examples Rihanna, where it's okay to do that.
Yes, Rihanna has a presence.
Rihanna is Rihanna.
When, yeah, she was Rihanna. Like, he just looked, it was weird.
Sad.
It was weird. So
very sad. And I think to your point, why do we need these people to tour? Now, obviously, he has to make money and et cetera, but it's weird in the docuseries to see the woman who works for his management company, Allison, be like, his favorite thing is to perform. And I was like, in what year was that true? Like, maybe in the year 2009?
Probably.
Maybe, yeah.
When it was still novel for him and when, you know, but I think his favorite thing is being in the studio. I think you really get that.
I think
sense.
His favorite thing is vibing.
Yeah. That's his like second his favorite
vibe
thing.
Vibe checks.
Yeah.
Just, he just runs around.
Expeditious vibing.
I mean, that's, I mean, who can relate? So anyway, Changes has arrived and I feel like it's very good because I feel like it does this double trick of more or less being the music that Justin Bieber would like to make slash is best at making, while also kind of, as you brought out before, not being extremely poppy. Like, it's a pop record, popular record by dint of the fact that Justin Bieber put it out. But they're not competitive records in the sort of American pop music marketplace, especially as it exists right now, where basically it's either Billie Eilish or Roddy Ricch, you know, like that's Justin kind of doing these sort of like low key mid tempo bops. It's like, nice. It super serves the Justin Bieber audience, but it doesn't like Yummy, as Karen likes to point out, Yummy is not a smash.
No,
we didn't even listen to Yummy. We should listen to Yummy. No. Oh, my God. Now we have to listen to Yummy. Okay, we'll listen to Yummy. But you can put the version that has Summer Walker.
Yeah, I was going to request that.
Yeah. We'll do the Summer Walker version. So, like, the part, like, a minute and a half in where, like, gives way from Justin to Summer. We can do that part. Just to make everybody happy.
From Justin to Summer. That could be there.
That's a great movie. Would watch.
Yeah.
This podcast is supported by Nutrafol. Hair thinning is never just about your hair. It could be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets key root causes of hair thinning. And my Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand. Discover your root causes at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
To repeat, Yummy is not a smash, as Karen is very excited to It's the specter of Karen on this podcast.
You like Yummy?
You don't like
I don't like Yummy. I like Intention better.
I like a lot of songs.
Quavo. Yeah.
On this song, on this album better, to be fair.
Yeah. Yummy is a choice for first single and kind of his comeback single. Sets the tone of that, though, that there isn't, like, this big single from Purpose was Sorry, and that was, like, you know, maybe overpromised on what that the rest of that record was going to sound like. But I think Yummy is a very indicative single of, like, what this project is and the fact that there aren't really, I think, like, everyone's going to have a different favorite song one that they like. It's there's no, like, immediate standout. And I think you made the point, too, in your review that I agree with that that is sort of a win for him at this point, because if having another song like Sorry catapults him once again into the stratosphere of fame that clearly brought up all sorts of problems for him, put him in a really dark place, this feels safe for him like his mental health right now, too.
It's all about reluctance. And I hear reluctance in the shape of his singing. I hear reluctance in the tempo of the songs. I hear reluctance in the intensity of his vocal choices, or relative lack of intensity of his vocal choices. You know, I don't think we think pop stars are sort of, there's like a, it's always fifth gear, you know, it's like just always go, 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 go. And I think now more than ever, as you see with the kind of range of people who are extremely popular and the types of music, that doesn't, it's not how it used to be. It's not like Michael Jackson era pop, Madonna era pop, or Britney era pop, or NSYNC era pop. It's not all maximalist. And so I think Bieber kind of ends up being like a very modern 2020 type pop star, because he's just like, I'm just a cool guy doing my thing. Like, and like, I happen to have like 75 million fans. But like, whatevs.
I think he's in this. It's funny too that he's 25 and has this almost like elder statesman.
Oh my God. That's right. He's 25.
Yeah. Like, he's been famous for half his life and since he was 13 years old. And so, yeah, I keep thinking he's older than he actually is, but he's only 25. I think he's turning 26 like next month. But looking at someone like Billie Eilish, or even Summer Walker is a couple years younger than him, I think like there's these people who are now ascending to a certain amount of fame that are just like, oh, when I was a kid, I liked Justin Bieber, and he was, I had his picture on my wall as Billie Eilish.
Did she post the Room photo with the posters and everything?
Yeah, the single art when he was on the Bad Guy remix was like her as a little girl with a picture of it. So in a weird way, he's still like really young in terms of human being years, but he, in pop star years, he's in like his second decade now. And this sounds like someone kind of settling into that role of, I'm not going to be like on the cutting edge anymore. Yeah. I'm just going to like do my thing in my lane.
But I think taking control of the speed of his descent, essentially, that's the most kind of promising or hopeful thing on this record, is what feels like him saying, I know that I probably could work with whoever. I could work with Billie Eilish. I could work with even a Max Martin or whatever, but I'm literally just me and Pooh Bear. We're going to go, like, some no-name producer is going to do like a, and I'm just going to jam. I'm going to get my Jack Johnson on and just jam out here. And then that's that. And that's controlling the narrative to the degree that we believe that pop stars are controlling the narrative. Like, I don't think Scooter was like, you're going to make this R&B record, kid. Like, I don't think that's how it went. I think Justin was like, this is basically like, the only thing I'm going to do is this.
I mean, we should talk about the documentary, too, in speaking of controlling the narrative.
So there's a YouTube Originals documentary.
Yes.
There are 10 parts. I've only seen 8. I don't know if even the last 2 are out yet. They may be out by the time this comes out. So I've seen the first 8. These came out sort of like right when the Taylor documentary came out. So obviously, like, there are some people who wrote about them as they were as together, as if they were doing similar things. They are very much not doing similar things.
Yeah, I agree.
For one, Taylor is like a fully formed public facing human being who aspires to remain a fully formed public facing human being. Also, there was like a real film director, like an actual film director who worked on the Taylor project, whereas this seems like it was like maybe just like the content guy who works for Bieber or Scooter.
Yeah.
Hell, if that's my next job, then I guess I'll just have to accept that that's my next job. So it does feel a little bit more like branded, like corpo.
The difference is like, well, probably with both of them, though, like the amount of like darkness and quote unquote hard truth that you're getting is very mediated through.
Strained.
It's biased,
yes,
to tell a certain story.
Was there anything that really concerned me? Yeah, I think maybe like maybe the lean when he was drinking that. Can I say that?
There was a time where I was sipping lean, I was popping pills, I was doing Molly, you know, shrooms, everything. And it was just an escape for me. I was just young, you know, like everybody in the industry and people in the world who experiment and do, you know, just normal growing up things. But my experience was in front of cameras, and I had a different level of exposure and people, and like I had a lot of money and a lot of things. So then you have all these people around me just kind of hanging on, wanting stuff from me, knowing that like I was living this lifestyle that they also wanted to live, drinking, smoking.
So that was Justin Bieber talking about doing drugs on the Seasons series, which is on YouTube now.
Just hearing people saying like, oh yeah, he was sipping lean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So first of all, Bugatti Bieber era, yeah. RIP ASAP Yams, every day and all day. It was his swag coach who first said it, which is so funny because you could tell, you know, it's like when you've had a lifetime of protecting the interests of a Justin Bieber type character, and you just like, you don't even know what real life, you don't even know where like the earth is anymore. Like you have no context. So he's like, can I say that? Can I say this?
Yeah.
He was sipping lean. Or that's, he sort of phrases if like for the first time, like someone like pierced a hole and he like saw sunlight for the first time.
Yeah. But at the same time, Justin Bieber is the executive producer of this documentary. And like, so he's the one saying, yes, you can say this.
And then Bieber himself like gets into the details. They're like, there's great montages of Bieber just be, I mean, you know, obviously a terrible time period for a young man given too much too soon. Very good peak tabloid stuff. And there was that time where you're like, is Justin Bieber going to be like, is he going to be like a bad boy for the next 30 years? Like, is that the direction that things are going? You know, you just don't know. But as you mentioned, Lindsay, there are all these health issues. And the 8 parts of the YouTube series I've seen so far are kind of like broken up into sections. And the first 4 are sort of like, we're going to make this album. Like, Justin's coming out of hibernation. We're going to make this record. And then the next 2 are very peculiar. They're very peculiar.
Yeah.
7 and 8 are about the wedding. And I was like, this makes me happy. Like watching Justin Bieber literally put on his wedding tuxedo, like one leg at a time. Good content. Very grateful it exists. 5 and 6 though. Woo.
Mm.
Okay. So explain. He talks about drug use as we heard before.
He also alludes to the fact that he started smoking weed when he was like 12 and 13, which is sort of the beginning of it. That's another moment where he's like, you see him kind of be like, I'm not like condoning this.
Right.
Kids, don't try this at home. But pretty much the whole time that he was a teen star was somehow medicating in some way. We don't
know. Doesn't specify pre-scooter or post-scooter.
Mm.
Doesn't specify.
Yeah.
Doesn't say, you know, YouTube Bieber was also smoking weed.
Yeah.
Or lives with Usher Bieber is smoking weed. Like, you know, very careful, some careful excisions there.
They go back to his home.
Yes.
Where his apartment was in Toronto, I think.
No, not Stratford.
Okay. In Canada.
Yes. And somewhere in Canada. Just
he
kind of
says, like,
it.
This is the first place I ever smoked weed or something.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Very
okay.
Young. So he was young, and I think the point is that he's had these issues for the entire time he's been famous, even when the outward-facing Bieber was this cherubic young kid. Like, he is someone that always was going to have to fill that void somehow and was troubled. And maybe only once in his late teens, when kind of the Bugatti Bieber came out.
Say it with your chest.
And the mop bucket peeing incident.
And didn't he say Bill Clinton? At some point.
Yeah, wow.
Like, for whatever reason.
They should have thrown
back
to that in the
doc. And then, like, had to apologize to Bill
Clinton. It was a weird, again.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
There's a lot to be sorry about. But, yeah, I think he had sort of become, like, a punchline to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And something that I found interesting about the dark parts of this documentary, you know, we're obviously getting his take on it. is we're probably not getting like every single detail sure. and the things that might make him look a little bit worse. We don't hear much about his relationship with Selena Gomez. Her take on that sounds a little different than his. Mm-hmm. So there's things that we're not getting, but I also don't think, like, I had seen some reviews that were just like, you know, this is his version of the story, this is manufactured and whatever. And I don't think seeing what living his life in public did to him, I don't think I need that version of that story. You know, like, I'm kind of content to not know everything and not feel.
So you think it's too much?
I don't think it's too much, but I don't think I need more from him than this.
Did you need more from his doctors?
Well, yeah.
Okay, so talk about the doctors.
Dr. Amen. So there's a part when he's talking about, like, his low point when he actually, I think this most striking quote is when he's like, my handlers were, like, checking on me at night to see if I had a pulse still. Like, that
yeah,
was
like
how
on some
got,
Michael Jackson, yeah, propofol, yeah, like, past, just, whoo,
yeah,
checked out.
And you know, there's so many stories that end like that, and you kind of see how close he maybe got to that. Yeah. And then you're also seeing this kind of Bieber wellness team that he's put together around him.
It's very Goop.
Yeah, it's Boop. Beep. I don't know.
Now, I have seen a lot of promotional content / docuseries. You know, obviously, we remember the Metallica documentary where they, like, went to therapy as a group, and you had, like, the therapist who kind of was like, I'm kind of down with the band. Like, I'm gonna fix y'all, but I'm kind of like one of y'all, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, we've seen some of this before, putting this vulnerability, but, like, there are talking heads. Like, the talking heads in the Justin Bieber docuseries are, like, his manager, his swag coach, someone who also works for a management company, his wife, and two doctors, mm-hmm, which is a very deliberate choice.
One of whom is billed as Dr. Amen, Justin's brain health doctor. That is verbatim. And I'm just going to leave that there.
Look, I just want to say I would be very grateful to have a brain health doctor. I don't know if the New York Times insurance covers it. I don't know. I guess if there are any brain health doctors out there, whatever that might be, and you're covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield.
This is the future liberals want.
That's true. It's true. I was very struck because what it does is it formalizes, concretizes, and kind of centers the health recovery narrative, mm-hmm, as part of the Justin Bieber comeback. So at some point he says, I forget if it was him or one of the doctors, they say he has Lyme, he has Epstein-Barr, he's recovering from years of chemical dependency, he's taking this NAD treatment, mm-hmm, which I looked up. Did you look
this
up?
Me too, yeah.
So it's like an amino acid holistic recovery.
Yeah, like a
treatment?
Detox, like, yeah, a holistic detox, basically, that seems too new that there's not very conclusive.
I don't get the sense that it's like
it.
FDA approved.
But it's Dr. Amen approved. Amen. So the point is,
it's Justin hugging the nurse approved. Like, Justin loves the nurse.
Yeah. Like, he goes in enough for these that he knows the nurse.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of see that he now has built this team around himself that the job is keeping him well. And Haley is sort of in that world. There's parts where she's, like, reminding him to take his medication.
Very sweet.
And things like that. And I think their relationship makes a lot more sense to me. Like, I wasn't, like, confused about it before. I think they...
Wait, I think I was slightly.
In the beginning, maybe. But I really got a sense of, like, he needs someone who's going to provide a lot of support to him.
Yeah.
Kind of the full-time job of... You know, and she seems up for that. And
I think I forget who I texted immediately after watching those the number 5 and 6. And I think I was like, my main takeaways from the YouTube series are Justin Bieber is ... sad. Haley Bieber is ... underemployed.
Mm.
She's got a lot of time.
Yeah.
She's got to hang in the studio.
But that's what he needs.
No, of course. And she is not underemployed in the sense, in the classical sense.
Yeah.
In the sort of a macroeconomic sense.
Yes.
Not within the context of their relationship sense.
But
yeah,
I think something that was also striking about them is that, so this fabled moment when they met when she was like 11 and he was 13
She's looking extremely bored. She's looking extremely eye roll.
And her dad, Stephen Baldwin, like, set it up.
And like, he's remember that when Steve, he says, he like doesn't immediately give his last name. He like hesitates because he's sort of like, am I going to be like just a cool old guy? Or am I going to like, maybe this kid knows who I am? So he's like, how you doing, Justin? I'm Steve Baldwin. And there's like just that like microsecond in between where, you know, he's thinking like, do I need to flex on this kid?
And Justin's like, oh, I thought it was Billy.
Yeah,
no, he doesn't.
Like, Justin was literally like, I only talk to teenage girls. Like, I don't even like, get out of my face, old man.
But I think the point that was striking to me about that is like their first documented meeting is like documented on footage and goes to show for both of them like how much they, you know, I'm sure that there's so many videos like that of him meeting random 11-year-old girls, probably not with the Stephen Baldwin production. Like, I think it was on his side, but just something about their lives were both so sort of scrutinized in this way and strange and documented in this pretty digital era specific mania that I think they do have a lot in common and can tune that world out on a similar level, if that makes sense.
Yes, and I do think the way that they have chosen to function as this kind of isolation unit.
Yeah.
You don't see, I don't think I mentioned this in the piece, but like something I was struck by is you don't see a lot of Justin Bieber interacting with normal people. Now that's regular for like a famous person. It's not like super surprising. But the only time you see them interacting is when they're like maybe road tripping and they like go to the 7-Eleven or something in like Utah or wherever. But basically it's like they're in the bubble. They're in the bubble of their under-furnished home throwing tennis balls at each other, or they're in the bubble of the studio, or they're in the literal bubble
of
the
bubble.
Justin's getting zipped into the oxygen chamber, which he uses to de-stress. Do I have to get one of those?
I think I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they are always quite literally in a bubble. And I thought it was striking that Bieber and his management decided to make health such a prominent part of this comeback narrative. You don't really hear it alluded to on the record, I guess, or maybe like well-being, psychological comfort, not physical health, but to make physical health. And did you feel that it was counter-programming? Like, it was very firm and like, we're going to basically completely correct for the Bugatti Bieber era, and we're going to be like, Justin is like all about health and wellness and cleanliness now? Or did it feel like people are going to want to know he's okay, and we want to show them that he's okay?
It seems like a little bit of both. I think it's also like coming at a moment where, I don't want to say that's trendy, but there is a sort of like pop vocabulary to talk about mental health and anxiety and wellness and all these sort of treatments that 5 years ago when he was struggling pretty visibly, there we just like didn't yet have a language where we talked about that.
Yeah.
And I think weirdly enough, that is what kind of links him to Selena Gomez in this era of her career too, because she is also someone who has now been open about suffering from mental and physical illnesses at the time that she was really famous and needing to sort of retool her fame around what is going to be healthy and sustainable for her.
Yeah.
And I just think, I think it's a combination of him responding to these things that happened in his life, but also fitting into a moment where we are kind of having those conversations. And even, you know, just thinking about the artists that we've lost recently from overdoses and things like that, it feels like people are maybe ready to begin talking about this, even if there is a little branding element to it sometimes.
I
think that's better than not talking about it at all, though.
There are two songs on this record specifically that made me feel the opposite of what we're talking about, which is to say, made me concerned, made me wonder about the love languages that Justin Bieber has learned or has been given. So can we play Take It Out on Me?
You can take it out on me. You can take it out on me. Sometimes I don't mind you having the worst day. Oh no, I don't. All the stress from Tinder built up energy. Yes, it does. On the edge, I'm your neck, I wanna fall back. Easy on that pressure point, a lot of push that.
Let your frustrations out right here. I'm a psychiatrist. Let's talk about it. We can use sign language. I know you got it. I see the weight weighing on your shoulders. It's so heavy. Let me be the meaning of your composure. Oh, oh, you can take it out on me.
So I want to say off rip, I really like this song. This does feel like a real grown R&B record. Really vivid imagery, really felt singing, but also disturbing.
Yeah, like maybe get an actual therapist.
Yeah, like I was this song made me worry about the way that he communicates his feelings, you know, or the way that feelings have been communicated to him.
Yeah.
The other song is Running Over. So that's two songs back to back that are basically about the physicalizing, that's not a word, of emotional intensity for positive or for negative. And I found them both, even though I like both these songs, especially Take It Out on Me, I found them both a little uncomfortable because one of the sort of things that we, for years, we kind of understood that Bieber was mishandling things, whether emotionally, professionally, whatever. And the narrative now is he's in charge or he's back on a smooth path or smoother path. These two songs, I felt like these are like siren songs. These are like five alarm fire songs. Did they jump out at you at all?
Something that I noticed on this record that disturbed me a little bit is like a couple of the songs, I feel like I don't know if he's talking about God's love or his wife's love.
Oh, yeah.
And then you get like a line like, let's get it in expeditiously. And you're like, okay, I think I know which one this is. But then
later in the record, yes. I think there are a couple. The one that really, the last song, not counting the Yummy remix, at least for now,
it's a Hillsong record. And I think that strain has always been latent or sometimes like pretty overt in his music. And there were some songs on purpose like that too. But that was the sense I got of just, he is putting that type of faith into salvation through this marriage. And it's intense and a little scary at times. Like it feels huge and potentially I hope they make it, but
yeah,
it's like scary to think about if they don't. And again, it's like, I think his music has always had that worshipful quality, whether it's worshiping the girl in the early songs and sort of mixed with some of the religious imagery. And I do feel
and also
it here.
The nature that, so that goes both ways. It's the way that he conjures imagery and directing outwards and also the way that he absorbs energy coming inwards. Like, you know, the very nature of how his fans relate to him. I mean, this is someone who is not, nuance is not really part of the Bieber worldview in either direction.
Yeah. There's a line on one of the songs where he's like with arms wide open. And I was like, this doesn't not feel like a Creed reference to me. Like,
could be.
Could possibly. But it's operating in that sort of secular worship song.
What's that boy, Carl Lentz?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
is there a song that's not like a single yet or something like on this record that particularly jumped out at you or that you liked?
I like ETA.
Yes. Let's listen to ETA because that's a sinister banger right there. Woo!
It's an expeditious jam.
You know it is.
Feels like time's moving in slow motion. Just trying to occupy my mind so that I don't go loony over you. Ooh, just trying to amplify the sound to drown out all of this need for you. Biting my nails, got me nervous, so anxious. See, it's 1 o'clock now, noon felt like 3 hours ago. I just wanna know your ETA. ETA. Out the window, got me looking out the street. What's your ETA? Distance only made us grow fonder of one another. Be honest, what's your ETA?
I mean, I like some of the songs on the back end of this record because they sort of, they're a throwback to like Baby Busker JB.
Yeah.
You know, like it's him and a guitar. I don't know if he's playing the guitar, but it's just like, who cares? Much in the way of live singing.
R.I.P.
Doesn't matter.
R.I.P.
But it kind of conjures this, you know, like the image of him just like busking on the street corner in his hometown. And that's part of how, he, you know, the mythology of him.
And, like I said, it's bubble beats and it's guitar. Like it's popping guitars.
Yeah.
Like that's 80% of this record is one or the other.
Yeah. Things, and I sort of, I like him getting back to that sort of in the Love Yourself vein, but almost more like it is more R&B than that. And just kind of him riffing and vibing. And yeah, it's good.
I want to put in a vote for That's What Love Is, which is near the end of the record. And also is like a tiny bit low-key quasi-Christian, although not as much as the next song. A lot of times when I write about Bieber, I feel like there aren't that many artists, speaking broadly, who like when you write about them, like basically like old people are derisive of just the idea that you would take them seriously anymore. Like I think most old people like basically just don't even know who like Migos are. So like they don't engage with it. But like Justin Bieber is someone who is so famous and so popular, kind of like even people who know nothing about anything or kind of like think they have an opinion on Justin Bieber. And I feel like a lot of times when I'm writing about Justin Bieber, not that I'm doing something compensatory, but I really want to focus on what I believe are like the technical gifts that I think he does have. He is not the best singer. You know, he's not, you know, Casey Haley. You know, he's not like the best singer in America or Canada for that matter. But I do think that there is a softness, a creaminess, a flexibility to his tone. And I always like to refer to that when I'm writing about him because I feel like it's part of our job to try to distill down like, well, what's working here? What are people attracted to just besides the fact that he's like a handsome kid?
Yeah, I think there's a purity of his voice.
Totally
that,
agree.
That still, that you would think would somehow be lost after all that he's been through and admitted to. And I think maybe that's what feels just nice about this record is there are these moments of the just pure falsetto and this kind of almost like girlish beauty that he's
totally
still
great.
Kind of an androgynous thing sometimes even, that he still can get there and there still are these moments.
And it hasn't been wrecked.
Yeah.
It hasn't been, like you say, it hasn't been
wrecked.
All right, let's listen to That's What Love Is, which I think kind of fits that bill really well.
Ooh, and I can feel you, even though I haven't touched you. Yeah, that's what love is. That's what true love is. Wouldn't want nobody else by my side. Ooh, and you can trust me. After all the lies I told you, yeah, that's what love is. That's what true love is. Don't nobody else deserve my time. I reach out to you, but my hands can't hold enough of your greatness. You teach me patience. Let the best of our worlds collide. Never understood what it meant. It meant to submit to love. So beyond what lust is, hey, it's a blessing that you're in my life. Make me look even better when we shine together.
So Bieber, obviously sui generis. Like, how can you even mention somebody else in the same breath as Justin Bieber? However, I did find myself thinking about Harry Styles a little bit. And I did not get a chance last year to write about the Harry record. We didn't podcast about him. But I was thinking a lot about the Harry Styles record because I think the choices that Justin Bieber made to kind of recuse himself or remove himself from this narrative that he has been made a part of since 2009 or whatever, and to make songs that are not explicitly pop-focused records reminded me a little bit of kind of what the Harry Styles album sounds like. Now, obviously the context is different. His younger music was part of a group. He's British, cares about the Beatles. He cares about guitars, not in the same way that Justin Bieber cares about guitars. But there's something about the Harry Styles songs on Fine Line that are, I think I said the word competitive before, like they're not competitive. They're not kind of like trying to be in the discourse of what is the most now. he's famous enough that he can just be like, I'm going to make these weird 60s and 70s records, and that's just what I'm going to do. And I'm so famous that I can get away with this at least for one or two album cycles.
Which is almost weird and an intentional choice because we're living in the age where, like, the Louis Capaldi song hit number one, you know, like right around the time. Yeah, shouts to Louis Capaldi. But I remember seeing someone on Twitter saying,
man, Louis Capaldi.
That, like, if, you know, so that song hit number one, it was inescapable a little bit before the Harry record dropped.
Yep.
And, like, he could have easily probably made a song like that.
Absolutely.
And there are a few songs on Fine Line that are almost that, but kind of lack the hookiness and the blatant, I'm throwing my hat in the ring here to have this be like a huge global smash, because he doesn't need that. I think he's like Bieber in that way, that there's a built-in fan base, that record sold huge the first week. It's still selling well. And he doesn't need that radio smash.
Unlike Zayn.
Yeah.
You know, this is like where the Harry versus Zayn stuff, and obviously there's a lot embedded in this. It's race. There's a lot of stuff going on. But Zayn also, like, fundamentally, I think, would like to have a pop hit. And I think Harry Styles is kind of like, if I have it, I have it. And if I don't, I don't. But I'm still effing Harry Styles. You know, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm still Harry Styles. Also, I should say, when this record came out, and this maybe is a broader conversation about criticism that we can have in a different episode, I'm finding it increasingly hard with records that are kind of like surprise dropped or dropped kind of like with not that much up front. Now, there were singles off this record, but obviously the record just dropped. And I'm finding it hard to hear things kind of as clearly as I would like to hear them, just because I'm so bombarded by the discourse. So this record I found really hard to hear in December, but in January and February, I found it much easier to hear. And I find myself much more sympathetic to the record without being told constantly how genius it is.
Part of it was the timing that it came out at, like, year end time. So it wasn't something that, you know, everybody was kind of focused on their lists and such, or the critic sphere.
Yes.
But I also have felt like this record's really grown on me, and something that, you know, it's an album. It's like an old school AOR kind of deal. There's not. It's something that
Lindsey Christgau is here to tell us about the album. What was the album like?
The
I don't remember.
Of Harry Styles.
I don't remember what the album was like.
Yeah, just kind of you throw it on and you find yourself listening to, like, at least half of it. But, you know, like, there's not like one song that I'm seeking out, but it's sort of like the Bieber record is just like a vibe that he's kind of stretching out a little bit. And I like it much better than his first record.
Yeah,
too,
me
which
too.
I think was, I don't know what exactly he was trying to.
Well, I don't think Harry Styles knows what a Harry Styles record. I mean, this is what, I mean, look, I don't know what Harry was doing before One Direction, but One Direction was like kind of the least dogmatic of kind of teenish pop acts. So it's like, you can't even come out of One Direction and be like, well, I do that kind of music, because that's not even really a kind of music.
Yeah.
Which is why, and I think it's part of the reason Zayn has had a hard time pivoting, because his claim to success was being like the guy who occasionally vocally riffed in One Direction. So like once every 3 minutes in every other song. And Harry, I think, had no framework. You know, Harry is also like, have you seen the cut of my trousers? Look at these clothes I wear. He's inventing a persona. I don't know that he has quite landed on the music that is kind of as progressive or forward thinking as how he is presenting in the world sartorially and quasi politically.
I can see it so much in the way that, like, Bieber is kind of ensconced in his bubble of self-protection. I get the sense that Harry Styles is someone that's like, I'm still taking all this stuff in. I'm learning. I'm listening to Steely Dan for the first time. Like, the Rob Sheffield's Rolling Stone profile of him was very much like, he's a guy in his mid-20s being like, all this music is new to me, and I'm doing, like, acid for the first time, and, like, the world is just expanding. And I think you get that sense that he has maybe not completely landed on, like, he's sort of in the process of becoming in front of our eyes, and he just has, like, a presence and a charisma.
Is there a song on Fine Line specifically that you think either knocks or slaps or jams?
I really like Cherry. It's sort of his singer-songwriter moment. It's his real sad boy in my feelings song.
Yeah.
Which there's a lot more of that, you know, it's kind of a breakup album for him. And I think part of, you know, his whole, like, androgynous vibe and, like, I'm going to connect with my feminine side. I'm going to wear a pink shirt on the cover of the album. I like the songs that sort of engage with that. And this feels, dare I say, like a sad Taylor Swift song or something.
Yes, fair. Also, I just want to say as Pink Church before we play the song, which is, if you're not Harry Styles, you can't wear Gucci.
Mm.
I just want to go on record as saying that. Like, I know that's not the purpose of this podcast, but I just want to say that.
The public service.
I just feel like people should know. So it's fine if you're Harry Styles.
But if
like,
you're listening and you're Harry Styles, go for it.
Please do. Please do. Anyway, here's Cherry.
Don't you call him baby. We're not talking lately. Don't you call him what you used to call me. I confess, I can tell that you're at your best. I'm selfish, so I'm hating it.
So let's go out with probably my favorite or one of my favorite songs on the Harry record, which is Falling. And I don't want to say it's about, I mean, I don't know. Is it about Taylor Swift? I don't, it's about falling in love and then maybe writing breakup songs about somebody.
Yeah.
There's a thing on the previous Harry record where he liked to take a shot at Taylor, like, oh, you could write a song about this. What? And now he's the one sad writing songs. So let's hear sad boy Harry Styles, Falling.
I'm in my bed and you're not here, and there's no one to blame but the drink and my wandering hands. Forget what I said, it's not what I meant, and I can't take it back. I can't unpack the baggage left. What am I now? What am I now?
That is our show. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Lindsay Zolads. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us at podcastnytimes.com with any questions that you have or concerns, or post on the Facebook group, which I don't know how to find it. Just type podcast in Facebook. It'll be there. And maybe I will pop in the comments and we can talk about it. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, etc. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week.
And you missed me too. And I'm well aware I write too many songs about you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.